Highlights the fact that there is a very important, significant point about Narada Muni's life, in that actually there was a transformation from his ordinary previous existence, essentially under the material energy, as a mortal being, as an ordinary mortal being, and a transformation into an immortal being, someone who is completely, one's body is spiritual, composed of satchitananda, or eternality, knowledge and bliss. This concept of transformation. Now, of course, if we generally describe to you know, the mass of people that you can transform an ordinary person who is mortal into an immortal being, they will challenge that quite aggressively. that is not possible. And most people hearing that would consider that, you know, quite a ridiculous statement, that, you know, someone can be transformed from a mortal being into an immortal being. So much so that practically it's considered impossible, or people wouldn't even, you know, enter into the conversation. They would just dismiss the whole thing, you know, without. But actually, transformation, Srila Prabhupada states that actually the Supreme Lord's energies transform unlimitedly into all varieties of manifestation, but the Supreme Lord himself never transforms. Or, you know, he remains constant, or, you know, but his energies are always transforming. And of course, this is also a difficult concept to conceive. But first of all, just even discussing the point of transformation, generally people are very accustomed to a certain standard of existence, and whatever they're accustomed to, you know, we feel that that's the way it always has been, always will be, and you know, to think of anything beyond our level of circumstances or existence is you know, ridiculous. That people just accept, you know, my circumstances, my situation is the all in all. So we don't look beyond that. But actually, if we look at our circumstances, in every way, we can see that everything has transformed. Our circumstances, for a start, we'll speak of you know, our own personal characteristics, our circumstances. So, for instance, you know, the facilities. Most children that grow up, you know, in this day and age, if you speak to children about, you know, 4 or 5, you know, from that age, and they're starting to perceive the world around them. Of course, before, up to that age, they really just want to eat something. You know, they're just, everything is, you know, feeding and playing. And they don't really look past that. But they get to a certain age, 7 or 8, and they start to actually look at the nature of the world. And of course, for them, you know, they just see this modern technological world as the reality, as if there was never, you know, things were always this way. As long as this world existed, you know, there were cars and this and that and the other. So they become accustomed to that. We become accustomed to the standards of society, you know. So, for instance, we're accustomed to the fact that there is a certain level of constant level of violence. That these days, you know, everyone must always lock their doors, lock their windows. You know, anything of, you know, even if it's not very valuable, you have to lock it up and secure it, even if it has no real value at all, because you know, people will take it. You know, people are not safe. Whereas previously, you know, when I was growing up, it wasn't that long ago, believe it or not. But you know, we used to leave all our doors, all our windows, all our cars. Nothing was locked up. You never locked anything. You know. And believe it or not, children used to play on the streets. That's a fact. Children used to actually play outside. Yeah. We are, you know, the circumstances have changed so much that, you know, we are just accustomed that children don't play outside now. It's just too dangerous. There's, you know, there's cars. You can't trust anyone, you can't trust your relatives, you can't trust your friends, you can't trust your neighbours, you can't trust the school teacher, you can't trust the scout leader, you can't trust the doctor, you can't trust the dentist, like that. So kids, you can't trust your mother and father, you can't trust anyone. So children are, basically under lock and key these days. And for them to play outside is an unusual event. For instance, again, when people don't have as many visitors as what we used to, if a visitor comes to the average householder, the householder will think, well, how can I afford to feed this person? What's to speak is if they come with children. If someone turns up at someone's house unexpected, for devotees it's different, but actually if you get to know a lot of, householders who are non-devotees, if someone turns up at your house, generally you don't feed them. You may offer them a hot drink or something like that. But previously, when people used to turn up at your house, you actually gave them a full meal. I remember in New Zealand, in our property there, we had so it was just an ordinary block of land, housing block. I had 40 different varieties of fruits and vegetables at any one time, and when people would come, and of course, for devotees, and again, even amongst the devotees, it was slight different circumstances. The whole family would come at your house, and sometimes another couple of families would just turn up, and you would just, so you could have 15, 20 people, but you would just cook for them all. And all you do, you just walk out to the garden, you pick a few vegetables and some silver beets and some strawberries and what have you. You've got a sack of grains and a sack of potatoes. You make up some salad, and you make up some homemade bread, and and in the same cost that you feed your own family, you feed 20 people, and the next day they all come again, people come again because you fed them so nicely. it's a fact, they come back. I had another friend of mine who was a devotee, and he lived by the side of a railroad track. So generally, when you think of a railroad track, it's very, there's just stones and gravel. It's dry. It's dusty. There's nothing growing all around. Very desolate. So he lived there. But when you walk into his house, it was like a paradise. It was just greenery everywhere. And again, you could turn up with your whole family any time, and not only would he feed you and anyone else who turned up, but everyone who left that place left with two bagfuls of fresh fruits and vegetables from his garden. And you could go there the next day and he would do the same. It was just unending, like that, everyone. So of course, now it's different. So many things have changed. Of course, we take it for granted that our state of existence is the all in all. But actually, things are transforming. The material energy can transform in such a way as there can be unlimited and plentiful supply. The material energy can transform like that. For us, in Kali Yuga, we feel that the material energy is always, very restricted. But actually, that is another transformation of material energy. It can manifest as a very restricted form, where you can barely survive yourself, let alone provide for others, or the material energy can manifest in such a way that there is unlimited abundance for everyone. Srila Prabhupada used to, you see in the Prabhupada Leelamrita, the Prabhupada notes that, in his house, although they were, you know, not very wealthy at all, but you know, he remembers that when he, you know, they could go into the house and there was always abundant fruit, you know, bananas, mangoes, you know, and just so much. And his father would daily, every single day of the week, you know, many, many sadhus would come, and he would feed them and offer them, you know, abundant, you know, according to, you know, their desire, he would satisfy their every need. Okay. In a humorous way, you know, Prabhupada mentions he would also, because some of the sadhus used to smoke ganja, some of the Shivites and that, so he would also supply, you know, some ganja. But whatever you wanted, you know, he would supply like that, you know. Yeah. But you know, because that is their, it's for them, that is their practice. Not that he would take himself, but anyway, the material energy, it can transform itself into such a way that there is abundance, or there is restriction, or anywhere in between. But also, we see that you know, ourselves, just our own, you know, bodies. You know, Srila Prabhupada noticed that, you know, Americans used to be a lot taller, and, you know, even within his time, he noticed that the American generation, you know, began to shrink, and you know, this is the story in the Srimad Bhagavatam about King Muchukunda, and Kalyavan, the Yavana king, chased Krishna into the cave where Muchukunda had been sleeping as a result of a benediction from the demigods for thousands of years, something like that. And after being blessed by Lord Krishna, and I think he was going to Badarika Ashram, when he walked out of the cave and gradually saw people, he saw, oh, they've all become dwarves. Even, and that was 5,000 years ago. He said, oh. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was, you know, almost 7 foot. And Srila Prabhupada was very much attracted to Jayananda, you know, one of his disciples, because he felt that when he looked at Jayananda, it reminded him of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he was very tall and fair. And so, you know, when he looked, oh, here comes, you know, he would say, well, he just liked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But, you know, people's, you know, physical bodies, you know, their movements, you know, people sort of dart about these days, you know, quickly. People used to do things at a slower pace. I remember sometimes I go to my parents' place and we sit on the porch and talk. And, you know, it's a really unusual thing to do these days, you know, to sit on a porch and talk, because people just don't have time for that, you know. It's, you know, it's become something that just doesn't happen very often. So there's a lot of things, you know, just our movements, our, you know, mental activities. You know, we have very our minds are, you know, less capable. We have less capacity with our memories, with our intelligence. People's you know, span of attention is very short. And you see each generation that, you know, the children just to, they can't, it's very difficult to get them to sit quietly for any length of time and just chill out and, you know, just play or just relax and, you know, just look around. They've got to have this constant noise and coloured lights and, you know, things going off all the time to constantly distract them. Otherwise they just start breaking things and, you know, going a little bit psycho. My father said to me, he said, all he had to do was sit me in a cardboard box. He used to put his hat on me And I would sit there just for hours, and I would just look. And he said it was a little bit spooky because I would just look at everything for hours, you know. And just he put me in a cardboard box, and I just watch everyone. But you know, you try doing that with the children these days. You know, sit them still for 2 minutes. Very, very difficult. So, you know, our circumstances are completely different. Although we take it, oh no, this is the way, you know, it is. So here also, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, Krishna gives this information that, you know, one of the major transformations which everyone should be interested in is the fact that you can actually transform from the platform of mortality to the platform of immortality. You know, that transformation is there. And the example is given of Narada Muni. You know, his life is a living example of the stages, you know, each and every stage that he went through on that path of transformation. Therefore, this chapter is extremely important because we can actually see each and every step on that path of transformation from mortality to immortality. But, you know, again, one may question that, but even in nature we see that there are quite astounding transformations. Krishna, you know, always Krishna is supplying us unlimited evidence. He knows that we, in the material world, we tend to become covered by ignorance and then stubbornly very attached to that platform of ignorance. So he gives us constant examples by which we can see, no, there's something more than where you are at. Just like the butterfly. You know, the butterfly, you know, the funny looking caterpillar, you know, not very attractive. You know, it crawls into it and gets its little cocoon, and it transforms, and this beautiful butterfly comes out and flies away with all these beautiful colours like that. You know, that butterfly is, you know, that potential is there within that caterpillar. So that caterpillar has the potential to completely transform itself at that. And in fact, you know, this the whole modern scientific world is actually based upon the fact that we can utilize the attribute of material energy that it does transform itself. That ultimately, this material energy is energy, and the scientific, you know, thinkers of this age, they try to understand things from the most subtle platform of energy, and then they know that by you know, controlling that energy, they can make miraculous transformations, which are, you know, literally everything that we see in our modern world. As you walk out the door, the buildings, you know, the cars, the freeways, the planes, the ships, the technology is all a transformation of energy. And again, if you go back 300 years, you know, if you'd say to someone that you can take, you know, this material energy and transform it in such a way that you can put, you know, 700 or, you know, people on a, you know, something and float them into space, and float them through the sky, and you can, they will float from one country to another and be there within a few hours. You can transform the material. No, oh no, no, no. You know, but that such is the potency of transformation, you know, just the material energy. you know, our smartphones are based upon that principle that, you know, with one touch, so you apply some energy, because when you touch something, you've applied energy, you know, force. That energy transforms by, you know, various other energies which come into play, and you touch something and something will happen. You can, you know, hold, you know, some, from the top, some people are just touching buttons and and with sound is speaking. Whole skyscrapers are going up, you know, buildings, ships, or, you know, things are being manufactured. Someone is touching something. Some cars are being popped out of some machines. Someone is touching something else. And city is being flattened, turned into rubble by some bomb. You know, just a little bit of touch and energy is transforming, and so many, you know, incredible things are happening. so, you know, this principle of transformation is quite incredible, and so far we've only been discussing the material energy. Now, of course, one of the difficulties for the scientists is that, or the modern materialists, is that they don't understand the full ranges of energy. They're coming to terms with many of the, some, actually just a fraction of the varieties of energies of the material energy, which can produce all sorts of wonderful transformations, but they're yet to really acknowledge or understand the potency of the spiritual energy. And of course, from us, from the science of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that the spiritual energy is the ultimate energy which is controlling all other transformations of the material energy. So it is extremely important. for us, of course, studying Bhagavad Gita, studying Srimad Bhagavatam, we can understand there are different energies, material energy, spiritual energy, but the materialistic people cannot understand how there can be such, you know, different energies, a material energy and a spiritual energy coming from the same source. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that, again, all of these things Krishna personally demonstrates. So that if we have difficulty accepting something, Krishna shows, well, here is an example of it. Why should you not accept that? Just like the sun. From the sun, we get different energies. You get the energy of heat, and you get the energy of light. So they are, you know, acting in completely different ways, but they're coming from the same source. It's not just because there's, you know, the sun, that it only gives out one type of energy. It gives the heat, it gives the light. In fact, if you break it down, there are many different varieties of energy coming from the one source. They're completely different in the way that they work. So similarly, from the one absolute source, Krishna comes both the material and the spiritual energy. It's not, you know, impossible to accept that conclusion. The and by study of the spiritual science, we understand that we, the living being, that we are part of the spiritual energy, Brahman, and that we are incompatible with the nature of the material energy, and in fact we belong in the spiritual atmosphere. But although we are, again, the difficulty that materialistic people have when they understand, well, okay, you are part of the spiritual energy, that means that you are God. Because if you are the same energy as the Supreme Spirit, then you are, you know, the Supreme Spirit. But again, Srila Prabhupada gives a nice example that, for instance, one may say that I am American, President Obama is an American, therefore I am President Obama. That's what it's like saying, you know, I am Brahman, God is Brahman, therefore I am God. It's the same jump. But the scriptures point out that there is Parabrahman, you know, the Supreme Brahman. And in the same way, there is the Supreme American and the you know, the garden variety American. So in this way, but still, if we actually look very carefully at the science of energy, understanding the nature of the spiritual energy, the material energy, understanding that these various energies are actually manifested by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, once locking that information in and meditating upon that, then it's not difficult to understand how one can transform from the platform of mortality to the platform of immortality, because we can understand, yes, I am of the spiritual nature, but the spirit soul is covered by the material energy, and by a process of purification, that inherent immortal being that I am can once again be fully manifest. So, you know, it's not such a big jump if we understand the various steps and you know, the nature of the various energies involved. So actually, you know, this particular chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam is particularly important, because we have the example of Narada Muni. Actually, Krishna provides for us examples of living beings at every stage of existence. So, at every stage of consciousness, there's a living being is in, we will see an example of living beings, how they think, how they act, like that. You know, from the 8,400,000 different species to those on the spiritual path. So, for instance, if we want to see, you know, a very solid example of someone who is deeply absorbed in the karmakanda consciousness of life, we may look to Daksha. If we want to look at, you know, living beings who are absorbed in the jnanakanda conception of life, we may look at the four Kumaras. If we want to look at, you know, living beings who are absorbed in the bhakti cult under the spiritual energy of the Lord, we look to Narada Muni. But, and everywhere in between, you'll actually see that there are examples. What are their activities? What is their consciousness? What they need to do to take the next step on the path of immortality. All those examples are shown within Shastra. Similarly, on the path of devotional service, even in the life of Narada Muni, just one devotee, we see how he goes on all the different stages of sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti. All these different stages are there. And there are many, many different examples. If you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, Nectar Devotion, you know, Bhagavad Gita, you see actually examples of devotees on every stage of that progressive path of transformation from mortality to immortality, especially on the path of Bhakti Yoga. The examples of, you know, the how they're thinking, how they're acting, what are the good qualities of that situation, what are the defects, what they need to advance to the next stage. It's something like, and this is all by the grace of Krishna, it's something like if you go to school, you imagine if, you know, when you go to get an education, that there's no one else, you have no examples of anyone else, you know, in the education system. You've heard that 100 years ago, someone got educated and become a doctor like that, and that's your only example. But it's not like that. Actually, when you go to school, you see that you're in preps, and you think, you know, I'd like to be a doctor or a nurse or, you know, a fireman or, you know, whatever like that. How will I transform? You know, a little kid in the first stages of school, how will I transform into this, you know, completely different being, practically? And then you look and you see, oh, you know, there are so many children in first grade and second grade, and then you look at the children in third grade and fourth grade and fifth and sixth, and you see, oh, I can see the different, you know, they go from this to that to this to that, like that. And then you say, oh yes, I see how I'm going to get there, like that. Because there are so many examples on the way. And it's very, and then you know, yes, but if you didn't have that, if you didn't have those examples, you're the only one. You know, it'd be very difficult to actually even, you know, achieve the goal. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And this is the importance of, you know, having the association of devotees. Not associating with just, you know, the guru, but to see devotees on every single level is important. Because when people come to Krishna consciousness, and they're thinking, you know, how am I going to become this sadhu, a liberated person, you know, someone qualified to see Srimati Radharani and Lord Sri Krishna? How is that possible? But then you see, oh, you know, there are these devotees here, there are these ones who are, you know, aspiring for initiation, there are devotees who have just taken initiation, there are devotees who have, you know, about to take Brahman initiation, there are devotees who have taken Brahman or Brahmani initiation, there are devotees who have been Brahman or Brahmani for many, many years, there are sannyasis, there are disciples who have become gurus, like this, and you see, oh yeah, it's the same, oh yes, I see, like this, so you just join in and bada bing, bada boom, you know. Time goes by, and you get to the, you can see, yes, I'll get to the same point. But it's also, you know, very important that Srila Prabhupada didn't just establish the society and then retire. You know, sometimes people set something up, you know, because Srila Prabhupada understood that you actually have to see devotees from, you know, the beginning to the end. And therefore Srila Prabhupada always made his association available. You know, very, very much so. You know, just daily, you know, available, that, you know, people could see him chanting, worshipping the deities, you know, doing book distribution, preaching, taking his meal, taking a bath, shaving up, you know, all the things that devotees do. But it is very important to see how a completely immortal being or a liberated soul goes through those activities. And then it becomes just very easy. Oh yes, I can see how I can go through the stages and get to that point. Of course, you know, therefore, ISKCON is a little bit different, or a lot different from the law of the jungle. You know, the law of the jungle is that when any animal becomes elderly, they're fair prey for the young and the strong. Mahatma's looking worried. Mahatma's looking a bit worried. No, it's a fact. Actually, even modern materialistic human society is based on that. That the younger generation these days, they see that their way of success in life is to supersede the elders, the older generation, and as quick as possible to, shove them out the way or do away with them one way or another, and then to take, their position or, and facility and what have you. ISKCON is completely different. ISKCON is a society where, we want to see devotees at every level. So it's extremely important that we have senior devotees so that, younger devotees, have that, like as we said, like a school system where you see from start to finish. I remember one time Korma Prabhu said to me something. We were at some preaching program and I can't remember exactly what I said, that, oh, we should do this or we should do that. And he said, look, Ganga, the fact that we're just, older devotees over the age of, 40, still dressed in a dhoti and head shaven, is quite enough. It has quite an impact on people. He said, just before you do anything else, the fact that you're doing that is very, very significant. I took that point. It's very, very important, especially within our society. Also, Srila Prabhupada wanted, and he set the example, that senior devotees should also not just do their couple of years, either get a family, get a nice home, and then just retire. I've burned up my karma, I've got some mercy from Krishna, Jagannath. I've done my service to humanity and the society, and I think by Lord Chaitanya's grace, if I can just remember Krishna at the time of death, then I might be able to go back to God like that. That's actually, Prabhupada wanted that the senior devotees be always active and seriously engaged as far as practical and possible, right through to their last breath. It's not like I think the Mormon society and some like that, they do a 2-year stint, isn't it, where they travel around the world, they give out their Bibles and they knock on doors, and they're promised that once you've done that, your 2-year stint, you go to Salt Lake City or something like that, and you'll have a home, and you'll have a business, and you'll have a family, and that's it. Finish. You can retire. It's not like that. Our society is a little bit different. We particularly want the example of all level of devotees to be constantly present. It's very, very important. Therefore, of course, with materialistic society or animal society, as far as offering respect to seniors, it is these days it's absent. The younger generation these days can see no reason at all why they should offer any respect to any senior person. Where is it? And, you know, because most of their education comes through television. You know, previously, no, it's okay. Previously, you know, the grandparents would sit with the children and they would pass on so much culture. You know, now culture comes through Homer Simpson and, and Bart Simpson. That's where you get the culture. Why do we need, you know, old people who don't even watch Homer Simpson? What do they know? So, so television has replaced grandparents. That's a fact. As the one-eyed guru, the television, the one-eyed guru. So, but actually, you know, in our society, one, we should make it very, you know, be aware that because Krishna's energy, spiritual and material, can transform in such a way that there is abundance for everyone, actually there's no need for the, you know, survival of the fittest. You know, within ISKCON, that concept is not necessary, because in ISKCON we see that if 1,000 more people join this temple, and you think, oh, what about the facility, where will I sleep, you know? You know, what about the Maha sweets in the morning, you know? I'll never get any more, you know. I did. And no one will even notice me. I'll just sort of disappear. But the fact is that if 1,000 people join this movement tomorrow, there'd be 1,000 times or even 100,000 times more facility. Because that's the way Krishna works. And he would just transform and you'd be thinking, oh, how's... If you look at when Krishna was on this planet, you know, they had millions and millions of cows. In the Rasa dance, there were 3 billion gopis dancing wildly. You know, Krishna used to go out with his friends. There were just millions and millions of friends. You know, and millions and millions of cows. You know, there's no, Prabhupada used to say, you know, you must always remember that, you know, God is not a poor man. So, yeah, in this way, there can be just, you know, in our society we practice. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam we see that, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam stresses to always particularly, a civilized society particularly looks after the women, the children, cows, brahmanas, and the elderly. Very, very important. And one of the things, you know, when we study that Bhakti Bhai Baba, we have a whole session on that. Are we doing that in ISKCON? If not, let us put our heads together and make sure, because this is Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, simple things, for instance, Markandeya Rishi points out that, for instance, if you're going through a corridor, so you're walking this way, someone else is walking that way, who has right of way? Now, you're supposed to, if someone is senior, you stop and let them walk through. If someone, so senior can be by age or, you know, by their spiritual, you know, situation. Or if a brahmana is walking through, a non-brahmana would actually stop for the brahmana, or brahmani. But, you know, there are also practicalities, not that one should become, you know, proud, because even, you know, a senior devotee or a brahmin or a brahmani will stop, and if there is a pregnant woman walking through, they have right of way. Someone who is invalid, you know, or struggling to walk, you know, stably. Someone who is carrying a heavy load. So sometimes you see some of the ladies carrying, you know, they've got the trays, all Krishna's paraphernalia. You know, when you see them walking through the door, it doesn't matter who you are, you stop, you step back, and you let them walk through. You know, like that. So, you know, things like this, of course, sometimes, you know, you get to the door and you think, oh, hang on, you know, who goes first here? You know, I got a heavy load, but I'm limping, you know, like this, you know. But it gets a little tricky, but at least if the thought process is going on, that's important. At least if you're making some effort, you know, that's important. But not that, you know, I'm going through like a Bondi tram, don't get in my way, you know. So, you know, in this way, you know, here we see that now Narada Muni, how old is he? He's lived since the last day of Brahma. You know, but generally, if we take elderly people, you know, as insignificant, then, but Lord Narada Muni is, you know, so old, practically ancient. But the knowledge that we will get in this chapter from Narada Muni is extremely important, extremely important. You know, therefore, Śrīla Vyāsadeva, who is, you know, a great respectful personality in himself, is, you know, he's not going to let the opportunity go past without asking Narada Muni, wow, this is really important. You went from immortality, from mortality to immortality. I'm not going to let that information go without, you know, me noting it. You know, that's an important thing. And similarly, you know, that's actually how we should, you know, treat devotees on different levels of, you know, experience or seniority. It's like a gulab jamun. You should see him like a gulab jamun. You know, that you squeeze the nectar. You know, it's such, you know, what valuable, you know, experience or information can we draw from those persons in order to, you know, we don't want to lose that opportunity. What if that person wasn't here? You know, we may not, then we can't pay off, be able to get that information. And even, you know, even if senior devotees may not be so active, it's better if senior devotees are active. But even if they're not so active, we should be very careful still not to disregard that, oh, well, you know, that person not even, you know, probably not even doing anything now, you know, so, you know, what can we learn from them? Still, you know, there's a level of, you know, you can extract as much nectar as you can from even devotees, senior devotees who are not so active. And you know, if you sit down with them for 5 or 10 minutes, you'll be very, very surprised, you know, the experiences that any devotee has. I mean, every devotee, you know, if you spend 10 years as a devotee, your life is quite extraordinary. Any devotee, you know, I mean, you know, even 2 weeks in the life of a devotee is quite extraordinary, because they're actually under the spiritual energy. You know, so if there are devotees who, you know, have 10, 20, 30 years, you know, you should, even if they're not so active, you still offer them some respect and try to, you know, take that opportunity like Śrīla Vyāsadeva is doing. And be a little respectful. I remember once I was walking up the stairs and Jaipataka Maharaj was coming down from the top. And I had some meeting upstairs with some people. I had some ceremony or something, and I was a little bit late. I saw Jaipataka Maharaj coming down. I thought, I can probably just squeeze in, you know, beside and just, you know, humbly just sort of pass by. But as I sort of went up, he sort of turned a bit and then squished me into the wall like this. Yeah. And I immediately understood. senior devotee of his stature, give him the whole stairway. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, what is my service so important? Give him the whole stairway, you know. And that's, he did it in a funny way. We both sort of smiled at each other. But I took the point. You know, it was disrespectful, actually, for me, even think about going up those stairs while he was coming down. It was actually disrespectful. I should give him complete right of way. And he just, in a joking way, he made that point by squishing me up against the wall and crushing a couple of ribs. So, you know, in this way, we see, of course, from, you know, this one verse, how Śrīla Vyāsadeva is going to take advantage of the knowledge of Narada Muni. And as you go through this chapter, you'll see how wonderful it is that Śrīla Vyāsadeva took that trouble and had that intelligence to do that for our benefit. I'll just take a couple of quick questions if there's any there. That seems to be satisfied.
Yeah. You were talking about how what Narayana says in this chapter is very important. Is it about how his mother died?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's all the different stages and the circumstances that affected his consciousness and pushed him along that path to immortality, and, you know, the stages of his consciousness, what he was thinking, his emotions and everything, and his activities at every step. So it is a very important chapter, because each and every one of us will actually have to take the same steps that Narada Muni took, and adjust our consciousness in the same way that Narada Muni, if we want to come to that platform. And there's no other way. We can't actually say, well, I'll just do it another way. You know, Krishna is showing us, this is the staircase, this is the path, and, you know, you must tread that path. Just like on the line of Radharani's feet, there's a line that starts from sort of the top of her undersole, goes down to the bottom. It indicates that the path of spiritual life, if you want to attain the shelter of Radharani, or attain the shelter of the spiritual energy, the spiritual path is very narrow and thin. And if you step either side, you won't attain the shelter of Radharani. So this example in the Radha Muni shows us the very thin path to get there. And without that, we cannot attain immortality. He's the son of Brahma after. Now he's the son of Brahma. In a previous day of Brahma, the day before, in Brahma's, you know, one day back, he was not the son of Brahma, but the son of a maidservant. And how that came to be will be described. So, tune in. All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.